Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now, let me ask you a question. Have you ever heard about OCD? OCD means obsessive compulsive disorder. Tell me, do you know someone who has this disease? Have you ever wanted to know about dealing with stress, anxiety, and depression? Would you like to learn more about how to treat OCD? Tell me, can you imagine dealing with depression on a daily basis? Have you ever heard about two books called The First One is The Power of the Mind and How I Beat OCD, and the second book is called The Solution, How to Truly Beat Stress and Anxiety? Or better yet, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for today? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful and how to deal with depression? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place. And I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I will be introducing you to my guest. He is a success coach extraordinaire. This is the first time he's on the show, and he will provide us with informative, inspirational lessons and some really, really great advice about OCD and depression. I'm pleased to announce that this show is now live on Talk for Media and syndicated on iHeartRadio Talk with over 55 million subscribers. We are archived 24/7 for your listening pleasure at iHeartRadio. Also, LinkedIn announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed last year. So now it's time for you to sit back and relax as you enter the no wine zone. Pour yourself a glass of wine with some cheese and crackers and lots of chocolate. Now, let me tell you a little bit about my guest today. My guest has become one of Canada's most prolific experts and speakers on mental health, particularly anxiety and depression. Having been diagnosed at a young age with a severe form of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, anxiety, and clinical depression, he knows firsthand the effects of mental illness. By using the techniques and living the lifestyle he now teaches, he overcame what doctors told him he could not. His book, The Power of the Mind, How I Beat OCD, has helped so many. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show Jeremy Bennett. Hi, Jeremy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, January. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, I've been looking forward to exploring this topic of OCD with you. But, you know, before we talk about how your success story began, I think we need to address the fact that everyone in the world seems to be in a depression today because we've lost the wonderful, wonderful talent, Robin Williams. Do you have any thoughts about that?
You know, I heard the news this morning, and of course, I read it on Facebook and social media like so many other people, and I looked at it, and I said, no, this can't be true. This is one of these silly Facebook social media trends, and obviously I'm going to Google it and see that it's a hoax, and unfortunately, so unfortunately, it wasn't. And, I mean, the world is shocked. You know, what goes on behind closed doors, I mean, nobody ever really sees what somebody goes through, and then until something like this happens, and then, you know, it's a wake-up call for so many people because, you know, God only knows what happens behind closed doors, and it's such a tragedy.
Well, obviously, you know, I knew he had been dealing with addiction. I did not realize that the depth of his depression had taken him on such a tragic path. I think that a lot of people in the public who are performers, they really have a difficult time once they've become successful, keeping their equilibrium. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, so true. I couldn't agree more. So many people, so many personalities in the celebrity world, I see it all the time. I mean, they're struggling to become an artist or an actor or an actress, mm-hmm. and, you know, they're going check by check, week by week, and barely making it mm-hmm. to the point where, I mean, celebrity status overcomes them, and it's, you know, it's an overnight kind of thing. Maybe it's a social media kind of thing, a YouTube kind of thing, and then they're starstruck. And then what happens after that is that so many times, and we see this every day, January, so many times, people get to a place where they can buy everything, so money means kind of nothing to them anymore. And I mean, that state of appreciation is not there anymore. You know, they can get who they want, they can get what they want, they can do what they want. Money is never an issue anymore. And I mean, it gets to the point where that appreciation factor, that appreciation level, it just isn't there anymore. And people start to look at life a little differently. It becomes too easy for them. And then all too often, I mean, the addiction sets in. And what happens with the addiction is that people look towards alcohol and drugs because that puts them in the present moment. And when you're in the present moment, I mean, you feel fantastic, you feel great. But with alcohol and drugs, it's an artificial present moment because it numbs the brain, it numbs the mind. And they get to the point where they need more and more and more, to the point where, you know, the body can't take it anymore, the kidneys can't take it anymore, the liver can't take it anymore. And then they're basically every single drink they take, every single time they take drugs, they're robbing nature's ability to create resilience in them so that the next stressful situation that they face is going to be that much more tragic, it's going to be that much harder to get through. So, I mean, I see this happen in the celebrity world time and time after again. And, you know, I'm not saying that's what happened with Robin Williams, but I mean, maybe we'll never know what really happened behind closed doors, but it's such a tragedy.
Well, it's a known fact that alcohol and drugs are depressants. So if someone is dealing with either of those addictions, depression is going to be a big part of that. You know, I was watching CNN today, and they showed clips from the 5 trips that he made USO to the troops in Afghanistan. And, of course, my favorite movie was Good Morning Vietnam. He was such a wonderful American, and he did so much to help the troops and support them, keep their morale up. I think we all need to just have a moment of silence, and it's goodbye to Robin Williams. He was a wonderful American, brilliant comedic personality in our world, and I think we were lucky to have him with us for even a short time.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so sad. And I mean, just we lost one of the good ones, January. And I mean, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it when I read the news this morning. Like I said, I was in doubt until, you know, I watched the CNN and I watched the news stations. And it's so, so sad.
What is it like for you, Jeremy, because you are dealing or have dealt successfully with depression when you hear about a celebrity such as Robin Williams who hangs himself?
Yeah, I mean, it hits home for me because I grew up with a very severe case of obsessive compulsive disorder, otherwise known as OCD. And it's kind of pop culture nowadays, the full OCD realm. Most people heard of that name, heard of that disorder. And I mean, I grew up with it for about 10 solid years, not having a clue what OCD was. I mean, I was going 4 to 6 hours a day from tapping on things to walking back and forth over lines to, if I had a sip of water, I'd have to have another sip of water, another sip of water, another sip of water. I brush my teeth until it bled. I clean the toilet seat over and over and over and over again. In my worst years, I was doing 4 to 6 hours of these crippling rituals, these compulsions every single day, to the point where about year two or year three, I fell into that depression. And I didn't know, January, I didn't know what depression was. I was about, at that time, maybe about 16 years old.
Uh-huh.
I had no idea what OCD was. I had no idea what obsessive compulsive disorder was. We didn't have Google. We didn't have the internet.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't Google symptoms like we can nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And I eventually slipped into the depression. So when I hear tragic news like this, and I hear it, every few days, either from a celebrity or hear about a celebrity, I should say, or hear, somebody in my own province or country. It hits home to me because over here in the Western world, when it comes to stress, anxiety, depression, a lot of the time, what we're being force-fed to understand about it is completely not true. And for so many people, it's just here, take this prescription, go home, and see if that works. And the reality is a prescription will never treat the cause of anxiety or depression, will mask the symptoms. We kind of live in that world where drugs are pushed upon us, unfortunately.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes they're absolutely needed. There's no doubt about that. But most times, it doesn't treat the cause of why we're suffering with what we're suffering with.
Okay. Now, how old were you when this started to manifest itself, Jeremy?
I was about 12 years old when I first started to see the signs and symptoms of obsessive compulsive disorder. And keep in mind, at that time, I had no idea what it was. I can remember coming home and playing ball hockey with my friends, going up to my room trying to sleep, and I noticed that my dresser drawer was sticking out about an inch or two. And this pestering feeling of kind of get up, move the drawer in, push it in, it wouldn't leave me, and I couldn't get to sleep until I stood up, walked over to my dresser drawer, and pushed it in. And kind of like magic, that little pestering feeling went away. And then the next day, the next night, the same exact thing happened. I noticed one of my dresser drawers sticking out a little bit. And this weirdness, this feeling inside me, it wouldn't go away. And it was pestering enough to the point where I stood up, walked over, pushed it in, and kind of like magic, that feeling went away. And in junior high, I noticed that. And this was about 12 years old. In junior high, I noticed that the lines on the floor, I had a very difficult time walking over with my right foot first. I wouldn't go into an anxiety attack or panic attack, but at first, it was this weird feeling, this unsettling feeling in me if I walked over a line with my right foot first. So to get rid of that, I would go back and walk over with my left foot first. And then I noticed that the doorknobs, I would have to tap with my two fingers on my right hand. And then I noticed that things in my locker had to be on a 30-degree angle. And then I noticed that everything on my desk had to be on a 30-degree angle. And I noticed as the months went by, everything I said, I had to repeat under my breath. So if I looked at a friend and I said, "How you doing?" I would have to say, "How you doing? How you doing? How you doing? How you doing?" And then I think year two or year three is when it really hit me the most. And keep in mind, still at this point, I had no idea what OCD was. I thought I was going insane. I thought I was going crazy. I wouldn't tell anybody, although everybody around me saw. And that year, I went from, maybe half an hour a day to 45 minutes a day of doing compulsions to literally about 4 to 6 hours a day of these rituals, these compulsions to get rid of the anxiety. And those years is when it started to absolutely consume my life, and that's when I started to, fall in the crippling steps of clinical depression.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with Jeremy Bennett, we're going to talk about how his family reacted and how his first treatments began for OCD. We'll be right back.
Do you desire more control over your money and financial matters? Would you like simple solutions to complex financial topics? Do you want more security in your financial future? If you answered yes to any of these questions, the book 101 Principles to Wealth is your answer. It's available now on Amazon.com. That's 101 Principles to Wealth by Charles Brokop. Order today.
Are you striving to find a job you love but don't know where to start? If so, you'll want to know about Career Esteem's Find a Great Job Fast program. Learn new ways of job searching and how to find the hidden jobs that aren't being advertised. You don't have to rely on job boards anymore. Shave weeks or months off your job search. Go to careeresteem.com and click on Find a Job to learn more. That's careeresteem.com and click on Find a Job. Contact Sherry Sambersky, careeresteem.com. Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shall Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shall Not Whine at Amazon.com.
I'm pleased to announce that both Chuck and Sherry will be on the show this month, and their books are fantastic. I highly recommend them. Today we're visiting with Jeremy Bennett, who also knows the strength of the human mind and the ability to overcome mental illness. Now, Jeremy, how did your family react when all of this started manifesting itself?
Well, at first it was kind of, they were curious about it because I wasn't, you know, the first few months, the first few weeks, I wasn't crippled over an anxiety and depression. But as the years went on, I mean, they noticed the progressive crippling disorder that it had upon me. And they had no idea what OCD mm-hmm. was. They'd never heard of obsessive compulsive disorder.
Right.
So all they would see me tap on things. They would see me walking back over lines on the floor. They would see me pick up a glass of water, then put it down, then pick it up and put it down. They would see me, you know, turn on the TV, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off. And at that time, they thought I was extremely superstitious. And I knew down mm-hmm. in my heart I wasn't. I just didn't know why I was doing what I was doing. And day after day after day, you know, they sat me down. They said, Jeremy, why do you walk back and forth over lines? Why do you tap on things? Why do you do this? Are you superstitious? What's going on? And, you know, uh-huh. January, the only thing I could do, because I didn't know. I didn't have a clue why I was doing what I was doing. So the only mm-hmm. answer I could give them, I would say, and I kind of said this under my breath because it was so awkward, I would say, I don't know why I do it. And I would give them this, you know, mm-hmm. fake grin and then walk away because I didn't have an answer. Like, I'm 17 years old. How can I explain why I tap on things? How can I explain why I walk back and forth over things? How do I explain why I brush my teeth over and over and over and over and over again until it just poured blood out of my mouth? Like a 17-year-old uh-huh. with absolutely no knowledge of anxiety, stress, depression, OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, I couldn't tell them why I did mm-hmm. what I did. And every day they reached out to me and they said, Jeremy, uh-huh. talk to me. Why do you do this? Do you want to go to a doctor? And, you know, I couldn't really talk to them because I had no idea what was going on.
Well, what did they do? Did they finally get you to a doctor? And what were your first treatments like? How did you go about healing yourself?
Well, I think it was about year 8 of having OCD, not knowing what it mm-hmm. was, the mm-hmm. symptoms were through the roof, 4 to 6 hours a day, crippling anxiety and depression. And at that point, one of my worst years, I lost about 40 pounds in about 3 weeks. I went from a 96% average in junior high to the low 40s, where in grade 7 through 12, I was always in danger of failing. And year 8 is when a friend in grade 12 gave me a magazine. And in this mm-hmm. magazine was a story of a young girl going through all the same symptoms I was going through. And she eventually, at the end of the article, said that she was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. And at that time, that was the very first time I've ever in my entire life heard tell of OCD. And then, you know, I read and read and read on OCD, and I finally determined, you know, I'm not a doctor, but this is what I have. I was like, oh my God, there's somebody mm-hmm. else on earth that taps on things or walks back and forth over lines. I had no idea. And then finally,
uh-huh.
I took that magazine. And I was interested in studying the supernatural at the time, so I printed off an article on the computer, and I laid it on top of the article of the girl's story, and I told Dad, because I couldn't talk to Mom and Dad about this because I was so ashamed, so embarrassed, so scared. Like, how do you tell your parents at 17 years old that you think you have a mental disorder? And I knew that the stigma is still huge, and it was even bigger back then, 10, 12, 15 years ago. And
right.
I took the article of The Supernatural, laid it on top of the other article of The Girl with OCD, and I said, Dad, here, read this article on The Supernatural. And my plan was for him to pick that up and then see the other article of The Girl. And then that's what he did, and he read the article about the girl's story, and he came in the living room. And honestly, I've never felt so sick to my stomach in all my life, because I knew that 2 minutes later he was going to know that his son had a mental illness. And then he looked at me and he said, is this what you have? And I said, I think so. And he was dying to talk to me about it. And I wouldn't talk because I was just so scared and so ashamed.
Yeah.
And then he finally booked the first appointment to the doctor. And, of course, 2 minutes later I was on prescription drugs. And I thought, you know, I take the first drug and I stop tapping or I stop walking back and forth over lines. I was naive enough to think that. And I took the pharmaceuticals, I took the drugs, and about 6 or 7 months later, my father finally looked at me and he said, Jeremy, you know what, the pharmaceuticals are not working, and we have to try something else. And so, you know, I did the therapy,
Jeremy, did you become like a zombie with the pharmaceuticals?
Not really. I hear so many horror stories when it comes to pharmaceuticals. I didn't become zombie-like. The only thing that the drug kind of did for me, it gave me a little energy in the morning to get out of bed. Other than that, it didn't stop any symptoms. It didn't stop my depression. It didn't stop any of that stuff. And it wasn't until I took the disorder into my own hands and eventually, you know, kind of weaned myself off the drugs, and I should say this to all the listeners, if they're trying to get off the drugs, talk to a physician. Don't do it yourself. That can be more harm than good. So I weaned my way off the medication, and I kind of took the disorder in my own hands and looked at it completely differently, and then did the things that I needed to do to get through what I was going through. I mean, that's what I teach people in my presentations all over the world nowadays, is, you know, the top 10 things that create stress, anxiety, and depression, and the top 10 things to do to actually get rid of it. And I did those things, and I mean, it's 15 years later. I have absolutely no OCD in me. It's not a part of my life. I don't suffer with anxiety. I don't suffer with depression anymore, and it's been about 15 years since I've taken any kind of pharmaceutical.
Oh, that's amazing. That's an amazing story. And you went about this on your own, and sort you figured it out by yourself without doctors, because obviously they wanted to give you pharmaceuticals, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's thousands, if not millions, of, you know, wonderful therapists and counselors and doctors out there that, you know, that they do the right things, and it's nobody's fault when somebody prescribes a pharmaceutical, but at the end of the day, it's not treating the cause. It's treating the symptom. I say it all the time. I mean, you don't have a headache because you have a Tylenol deficiency. And the same goes for anxiety. You don't have anxiety because you have an Ativan deficiency. And until we realize this and wake up and look at pharmaceuticals for what it is, it's a chemical that the body rejects. And I mean, what happened to me, I looked at the mind, I looked at the brain, and my father actually asked me, he said, Jeremy, did you ever hear tell of a place called St. Anne de Beaupré Shrine in Quebec City? And I said, I said, yes. And this place is, you know, allegedly known for healing physical, you know,
miracles.
And he asked if I wanted to go. And I mean, that was a big decision for us. We didn't have money for trips. We didn't do that kind of thing. And, you know, I didn't want to get out of bed in the morning, let alone drive in a minivan with four other people for 4 days, tapping on things. But I said yes, and we went there. And, you know, I can remember that like last night. I went into the hotel room. I sat on the edge of the bathtub, and I took a towel, and I threw it on the floor. And I said, if this place is going to help me tomorrow, St. Anne de Beaupré Shrine, I want to know how badly I have OCD. And I threw the towel on the floor, and I wouldn't pick it up. And that's something my mind could not handle back then. I couldn't handle wrinkles on a towel or anything, or woolies on a towel. And I said to myself, you know, I'm going to fight this and see how badly I have this. So the first symptoms I would get is the pestering thought, pick it up, take off the woolies, take off the wrinkles. And I fought that, and of course the trembling started, the shaking started, the sweating started, and I never fought that. I would always give in to the ritual, always give in to the anxiety and do the thing that calmed the anxiety. But then I fought that, and then I started to not be able to breathe. And there was like a clamp on my lungs, and I was, and then I just picked it up and I tried to get all the wrinkles out. And then at that point, Daniel, is when I sat back and I started to cry, and I said, you know, if this place doesn't do anything for me tomorrow, I'm probably not going to be here next year. And that's when it really set into my mind. And then I did everything in the shrine the next day, and it wasn't until, I'll give you the very condensed version.
Well, you know, first, let's save this shrine and this miracle for our next segment, because this is quite an amazing story you're sharing with us. We're going to take a break and hear from our amazing sponsors. And when we come back with Jeremy Bennett, we're going to talk about what I think is a miracle. We'll be right back.
Everyone deserves a happy life. Life is supposed to be fun. Your life is supposed to feel good, and you're meant to feel happiness in your life and to satisfy your dreams. And you can. Because the only reason anyone wants anything or does anything is that they think they will feel better in the having of it or the doing of it. They think they will feel better in the experiencing of it. Coming soon, a website where you can learn more on how you can have the life you deserve at afeelgoodworld.com. Do you want to learn how to live into your dreams? One Door Closes, Overcoming Adversity by Following Your Dreams. The new book by Tom Ingracia and Jared Kredemski captures the thought-provoking stories of 16 people from all walks of life who have triumphed over adversity to achieve their goals. Plus, you'll get 10 self-assessment tools to design your own blueprint for success. Unlock your true potential. Fulfill your dreams. Be inspired. One Door Closes is available from Amazon.com.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes? People who have priceless personalities? In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle edition.
I want everyone to know that next week, Jared and Tom will be on the show sharing one of the chapters from their fabulous book. I'm pleased to welcome to back to our show today a really priceless personality, Jeremy Bennett. He was selected to represent Canada during Mental Illness Awareness Week. In 2012, the renowned World Organization of Natural Medicine appointed Jeremy as the World Youth Ambassador. And the following year, the same organization awarded him Personality of the Year. This is such a fascinating story that you're sharing with us, Jeremy. Now, let's back up a little bit. And you went to a shrine, and this was located in Canada.
Yeah, my father asked if I ever heard of it, and I mean, I kind of grew up fairly religiously, and I said, of course I did. So this place, the Nanda Beaupré Shrine in Quebec, is known to, you know, allegedly cure people of physical disease, of mental disease. So we packed up, left, went to the shrine, which was about, you know, a two-day drive or so, and I went into the hotel, and I had that experience of seeing how bad I had obsessive-compulsive disorder, and I realized that if this place didn't do anything for me the next day, because we had planned on spending the full day the next day at the shrine, you know, if it didn't do anything, I was, you know, I probably wasn't going to be here the year later. And when you have those thoughts, you see life kind of a little bit in a clearer scale. So we went to the shrine the next day. I've done everything I was supposed to do, all the prayers, and, you know, nothing happened, nothing worked. So I went back by myself a few hours later, and January, as soon as you walk in, there's this wall of crutches and braces and wheelchairs that people use to get in, but allegedly left behind because they were cured. And I can remember putting my hands on one of the braces, and I said to myself, if somebody can beat something physically and cure something physically, why can't I battle something in my mind? And I saw this flight of stairs outside the shrine, and I walked towards them, and in solid years, I wasn't able to walk up the first stair on a flight of stairs with my right foot first. And I said, I don't care if it happens anymore. And I had this adrenaline rush. And I'm not going to say it's spiritual or religious. And maybe it is. Maybe it's not. But I had this adrenaline rush, and I walked over. And instantaneously, as soon as I made the decision to walk up the first step with my right foot first, I was in an instant anxiety attack. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't walk. And if it weren't for the railings on either side of the stairs, I probably wouldn't have made it up. And I walked up to the top in the middle of a full-fledged panic attack, and I made it up there, and I said to myself, I can't stop now. I need to walk back to the hotel room, because if I stop now, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go straight down the set of stairs, walk up the set of stairs with my left foot first to get rid of the anxiety. And I kept going back, and the only thought in my mind was that I put it there myself. It wasn't an obsessive thought. The thought in my mind was, no matter what happens, you're not going to die. And I kept saying, you're not going to die, you're not going to die, you're not going to die. And I said, the worst that can happen is that you'll faint, your father will be there, and you'll wake up in hospital, dad will take care of you. I made it back to the hotel room, sat on the couch, and I said to myself, I either have to get over this anxiety attack right now, or I'm going to faint. I can't go back. I wasn't strong enough. I was just too weak from the anxiety. And about 5 minutes into it, I finally started to breathe in a normal way again. The shaking went away. The trembling went away. And then I said, if I beat this panic attack, which I did, the very first one in my life without giving into the ritual, I said, I beat my first one. I'm taking this back home, and I'm going to face them one after one, one after another, every single day. And after I did that and exposed myself to it, I started to understand the brain, the mind, and then I started to study psychology and really understand what anxiety is, where it comes from, get rid of all the myths and all the misunderstandings of it, and what we're being force-fed to understand and believe when most of it is just lies about it all, just to sell more drugs to people. And I started to understand what anxiety truly is and how to truly get rid of it, but more importantly, where it comes from, what we do every single day that most people are completely oblivious to, that actually causes it. And then I started to study the mind in a very formal way in university, and that's what I do nowadays, is share, not only share my story, but show people where anxiety truly comes from and how to get rid of something that they thought they could not.
Okay, now what are some of the myths about anxiety, Jeremy?
One of the biggest myths is that anxiety is a bad thing. You know, when you're going through anxiety, it's absolutely horrible. It's terrible. I will admit that. I went through 10 years of it. But anxiety is not a bad thing. It's the same as looking at physical pain and saying physical pain is a bad thing. Physical pain is a wonderful gift. It's a defense mechanism created by the brain to send the body a warning sign to say something is off balance. Address it. I mean, imagine if you're cooking on a hot burner and you accidentally stick your hand on the hot burner, but January, you didn't have the ability to feel the physical pain associated with the hot burner. What would you do if you were preoccupied with watching something on the television set? You would leave your hand there until you permanently disabled it. Pain is a warning sign to say, get your hand off right now, you're going to burn your hand. Anxiety, scientifically, is identical. Anxiety is a defense mechanism created by the brain to send the body a warning sign in the form of sweaty hands or obsessive worrying thoughts, you know, a racing heartbeat, you know, high blood pressure. These are warning signs to say something is off balance in your life. And until you address it, you're not going to get rid of anxiety, because anxiety is a friend. It's like breaking your leg. You're not going to get rid of the pain until you put a cast on it and go to the emergency room and get it addressed. Anxiety is the same thing. It's a defense mechanism created by the brain to send the body a warning sign to say, address something, and until you do, I'm going to be your friend, and I'm going to give you discomfort until you address it. And I mean, I always get the question, well, why does it have to be discomforting? Why? And I mean, if it wasn't discomforting, I mean, imagine breaking your leg and having, you know, imagine breaking your leg and the defense mechanism being an orgasm. You would always want to break your leg, but it's not. It's pain. It's physical pain, because the brain knows. The brain is doing 6 trillion things to 60 trillion cells every single second. The amount of intellect in the brain is astronomical. We can never come close to understand that. So everything we experience is experiencing for the greater good to help protect us. So, I mean, that's myth number one. It's not a bad thing. When you go through it, it's terrible.
Not a bad
thing. Physical pain is terrible. But it's not a bad thing. It's a defense mechanism created by the brain to say, address what's causing it.
Okay. You know, and when I think about it, anxiety actually gives me an adrenaline rush. And I've counseled and mentored so many people and encourage them to do things that scare them. And that actually creates anxiety. And so you're absolutely right. It's not a bad thing. It can actually work for your benefit.
Absolutely. And I mean, most of anxiety, you know, the kind that we don't want is when we're sitting down watching the Cosby Show and we take a panic attack. That's the thing that's not purposeful. It's not, you know, it's no good to the body. Uh-huh. The kind we do want is when, you know, if you're out in the wild and an alligator approaches you, you want that fight or flight response. You want that anxiety.
Yeah.
That's to say, get the heck out of the way. You're going to become alligator food. That's what it's designed for. But because of what we do on a daily basis, we're actually changing brain chemistry, and most people are completely oblivious to this. We're changing brain chemistry to the point that, you know, we're sitting down in a completely safe environment, and that's when we have a panic attack. And that's the kind of anxiety that is not productive, and that's the kind of anxiety that I teach people how to get rid of.
Okay. Now, let's back up, and any other myths about anxiety we need to dispel right now?
Yeah, absolutely. The other big thing is that so many people, they come to me or they email me or they come to my presentations or they watch the TV show and they email me and they say, Jeremy, okay, I understand what you're saying, but, you know, I'm suffering with anxiety every day or clinical depression every day. And they say to me, Jeremy, there wasn't one big traumatic thing that happened in my childhood. Like, I can't remember anything that's triggering this anxiety today. And that's the myth. So many people look at their childhood, and sometimes it absolutely is something, you know, horrific in their childhood that's triggering anxiety today. But the reality is, it's usually not the one big thing that happened in somebody's childhood. That's why they can't, you know, find anything in their childhood that's causing the anxiety. And the thing is, the myth is that it's hardly ever something in the past. It's the dozens and dozens and dozens of little things that people are doing.
Okay. Okay, I lost him.
That call dropped.
Yeah, it did. Throw in that commercial at 38 and see if he calls back. I'm sure he will.
Second time around can be better. Second timers try harder. Looking to have a rewarding second marriage? Any marriage? Read Successful Second Marriages by Patricia Bubash. She interviews a variety of couples that have succeeded in their second attempt. Each story reflects that the second marriages can be tough going, yet be the best of the best. Learn from these couples who share their intimate stories, how they struggled with difficulty and have thrived. Stories such as, our kids drove us apart. We separated 5 times in 4 years. 4 months into our marriage, my 85-year-old father-in-law came to live with us. 1 year into our marriage, I was diagnosed legally blind. Death of my eldest child brought grief, depression into our new marriage. Successful Second Marriages is encouraging, hopeful, inspiring. Available on Amazon.com in book form and ebook. Read Pat's musings at www.successfulsecondmarriages.com.
Are you a fitness professional, a trainer, or a coach? Would you like consistent and timely updates on your team's performance? We have a completely customizable app that can give you real-time information via the internet or your handheld phone. Track the performance of your client's progress with their physical fitness regimen. Track team members' performance or schedule a workout session. Meet up at the gym, on the bike trail, or wherever your physical activities take you. The app is called Socially Fit, or SoFit, and can be found on the iTunes Store. Look for the blue Socially Fit icon. When combined with data analysis capabilities, you not only feel the effects of your fitness routine, you also see the graphical progress of your results. The app makes the complex simple, so that more of your time is spent sculpting your physique, with less time tracking your results with old-fashioned pen and paper. Download it today to begin a new year with data to show your progress in meeting your goals. Are you socially fit?
I hope that everyone listening, if you are not socially fit, I hope you will become socially fit this year. It certainly is my intention. We're visiting with Jeremy Bennett, and his second book, The Solution, How to Beat Anxiety, is currently being filmed as a documentary and forms the basis for one of his most transformational presentations to date, The Solution, 10 Ways to Beat Anxiety. Jeremy's message gives hope to all those suffering with anxiety and depression, says world-renowned doctor and Qigong grandmaster, Dame Dr. Effie Chow. You know, Jeremy, we were talking about panic attacks, and I think that so many people go through that, and it's a very, it's a part of anxiety, isn't it?
Oh, my God, absolutely, and I mean, I've suffered with it for years, and what most people don't understand and are completely oblivious to is that there's actually a cause to it. I mean, if you have a headache, you're dehydrated, or you're stressed out, or not enough sunlight, or not enough sleep. Well, when it comes to anxiety, because it's, you know, it's invisible, it's in the mind, it's in the brain, people kind of, they don't see the cause of it, and when they don't see the cause of it, they can only address the symptom. They don't address the cause, and, you know, we were talking about earlier, so many people blame situations and people for what they're going through. They say, you know, my kids are stressing me out, or my job is stressing me out, or my CEO is stressing me out, or you're causing my anxiety. And I mean, that's the other big myth. Scientifically, there's absolutely nothing out there that can cause you to experience stress, anxiety, or depression. It's never the situation. It's your psychological reaction to the situation. If it was a situation that stressed anybody out, everybody would react to the same situation in the same exact way. And we know that's not the case. How can one person love a roller coaster and one person absolutely dread it? One person releases endorphins, which is the feel-good chemical. The other person releases cortisol, which is the stress chemical, the stress hormone. So, I mean, situations don't cause stress or anxiety. Thoughts about those particular situations cause stress and anxiety. So what we really have to do is stand up and say, if I have anxiety, I'm actually the cause of my own anxiety. And, you know, we cannot address the cause of stress, anxiety, depression if we continue to blame other people or other situations for something that we're creating ourselves.
Oh, wow. This is big stuff. This is amazing. So you are the cause, your reaction. So what you talk about, 10 ways to beat anxiety and depression, give us number one.
Well, I mean, one thing that we have to understand, like I said earlier, we are the cause, so we have to look at what we're doing every single day. And I'll give you a few examples that all falls under the same category. So many people complain about everything.
Yeah, whine.
I mean, exactly. Whine, complain, it's the same thing. And I know you're an expert in talking about this subject. And I mean, you know more than mostly everybody about the subject. And January, what happens when we complain? When we hold a negative thought, the brain doesn't know the difference between something real and something you think about or imagine. So every single time we complain in a text, in an email, verbally, in our mind, or out loud, or any time we complain, the hypothalamus, which is a part of the brain, triggers the release of cortisol, which is the stress hormone from the adrenal gland and the kidneys. That makes our heart beat fast. That raises our blood pressure. That makes our hands sweat. That makes our hands clammy. You know, it does all these things, and in other words, they cause anxiety. I mean, cortisol is the stress hormone. So, I mean, every single time we complain, every time we gossip, we cannot gossip without hurting ourselves, because we can't gossip without holding a negative thought in our mind. If we hold a negative thought in our mind, the hypothalamus, which is a part of the brain, triggers the release of cortisol from the adrenal gland and the kidneys. That's the stress chemical. That's the stress hormone. So, I mean, gossiping, ridiculing, judging, complaining, this is actually changing brain chemistry and actually creating the stress and anxiety that we don't want in our lives. So step number one, we have to own up, we have to stand up and say, you know what, I'm causing exactly what I'm going through. And step number two, we need to make these changes. And I mean, that's just step number one, get rid of the complaining, gossiping, ridiculing, and, you know, the whining. We got to get rid of all that stuff, which is actually changing brain chemistry.
Well, you know, this is music to my ears, because I've been writing about thou shalt not whine, the 11th commandment, and I'm all against complaining and negativity. So this is exactly the message that I love sending out. And you have to make changes, and that's difficult to do, isn't it?
Oh, my God. I mean, nobody can read a book on hockey and become an NHL player the next morning. It takes baby steps. It takes these steps. And that's why so many people get discouraged. They do all the work. They do all, you know, everything I tell them to do. And a lot of the times, you know, the first week or two, it's torture. But then the third and fourth week, it's getting a little better. Then the next month, it gets better. It's baby steps, as you know, January. And it can't happen overnight. And that's the good news, is that it can't happen overnight. The brain is not designed to achieve a goal overnight without any work. work. It takes creation. It takes that commitment. It takes that dedication. And when you don't, you know, when you don't get what you want overnight, and you do get it over a month or a two, or it could be 3 years, no matter, you know, whatever the goal is, that's when you start to build commitment. That's when you start to build resilience. And another thing that people have to stop doing is stop relying on anything external to them to calm the mind. And we see it with drugs and alcohol and materialistic things all the time. So many people are stressed out, or they have anxiety, and they're a shopaholic. They're always looking for the next best thing, the bigger car, the bigger truck, the bigger home, you know, whatever it is. And what that does, it gives them an illusory state of happiness. And, you know, when they buy something new, they say, oh, my God, I feel great. And they do. But the thing is this. When they buy something new, all their attention is on the new thing. If all their attention is on the new thing, they're not thinking about the things that they usually think about, which are negative things. So they feel this kind of illusion of happiness. And then when the new thing gets old, of course, they get stressed out again. And then what happens? They want to buy something else. And then it's a cycle. It's a cycle.
It's a cycle. Well, you know, your journey is amazing. And I have to say that, in my opinion, it's been quite a spiritual experience that you went through when you saw crutches and people who had physical problems, and then you went and applied it to your mental situation. It's wonderful, and I really enjoyed sharing you today with my audience, especially since we've talked about Robin Williams and his tragic death. And so many of the things you're talking about today, Jeremy, I'm sure are exactly the things he went through. And I can't begin to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your success story with my listeners.
I mean, January, the pleasure was all mine. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's been fabulous. And to my listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our show today. Quite an amazing trip, journey, hasn't it? My upcoming guests will all be exciting, eclectic, and energizing, just like Jeremy. This is the show where you hear inspiring information that will help you to become successful too. I'd love to welcome you to our No Whining World. When you can, please sign on to my website, januaryjones.com, with your name and email, and you will get a free download. We love sharing our stories, our struggles, and our secrets for success. It's our hope we can encourage all of you to emulate our guests today and every day. Remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, my dear friends, please stop with the whining and then start smiling and then start sharing our show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then have some wine, cheese, crackers, and start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Again, thank you to my wonderful guest, Jeremy Bennett. This is January Jones, thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe as we close with music by Sorantos.
This is Sorantos. Check out my hot new fun dance song called I Love to Love You Too. 33% of all profits for this song are going to the American Heart Association. I hope you started singing and dancing. Check out my other songs for free on my website at www.melogia.com.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Story. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity, plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.
I won't have to yell at you. Russian banks have been taken out of SWIFT.